of Solomon, as we've said many times, the Song of Solomon is probably the most neglected book in the Word of God, so much so, I believe that if you removed it from most people's Bibles, they wouldn't even notice that it wasn't there. Of the 66 books in the Bible, it is certainly one of the most unique books, also one of the most misunderstood. There are people who even doubt or deny the inspiration of Song of Solomon. It's because they do not understand it. We're told the nature of the book at the very beginning. It is a song. We're told the excellency. It's the Song of Songs. And we're told its composer, the Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. I mean, the very first verse is filled with information. As you read the song, you cannot help but notice that it is figurative. It is allegorical. It abounds in metaphors and imagery. Also, as you read the book, you cannot help but notice that it is a love song. And herein again is one of the problems that people have. Really, they need to get their minds out of the gutter and just read the book. It's a story of love told in song. It is a song that portrays a man, probably King Solomon, and a woman. She's identified in chapter 6 and verse 13 as a Shulamite woman or maiden. The song consists of many different scenes. And through the scenes, these two individuals, this man and woman, they are in love. They are in communion with one another. Throughout the book, they express their love to one another. They express their respect for one another, their adoration, their appreciation for each other. So really, the song is full of instruction concerning the relationship between husband and wife. Often said, one of these days, and I'm going to teach a series of messages on marriage just from the book of Song of Solomon. There's much there concerning husband and wife. The book also illustrates the difficulties of true love. There are difficulties. It also illustrates the delights of true love. I'd like to turn to chapter 8, verse 5. This is a verse that we've preached from several times. We just want to read the first half, a question. Who is this that cometh up from the wilderness, leaning upon her beloved? Again, this story of love told in song between King Solomon and a Shulamite woman, or Shulamite maiden, is a picture of something far greater. It's a picture of something far, far more important. It is a love song of ourselves and Christ. And I believe primarily it is a song that portrays the special love relationship between Christ and his bride. kind of church did Jesus establish during his earthly ministry? And when you look at it as something greater than just a love story between King Solomon and this Shulamite maiden, chapter 8, verse 5, takes on a whole new meaning. And what we read as our text is a question, no doubt asked in the context of the daughters of Jerusalem. And they ask this question concerning this Shulamite woman. It is a question not for the sake of information or identity. You read the book, you see that these daughters of Jerusalem, they knew who she was. So the question, who is this, is not a question for the sake of information or identity. But it's more of an exclamation or an expression of wonder and astonishment. In our text, we see that this Shulamite woman is on her way out of the wilderness. No doubt heading to Jerusalem. The subject today of the message is on our way out of this mess. On our way out of this mess. Notice I said more than one day we're going to be out of this mess. That's true. But we're on our way out of this mess. That should be so today. First of all, consider the place where this woman is seen, the wilderness. Very fitting image to describe this world. Very fitting image to describe the times in which we live. Following God creating this world, we read, "And God saw everything that He made, and behold, it was very good." It was very good. That is, it was exceedingly and exceptionally good. Everything was properly arranged. And in the Genesis account of creation, you see Adam and Eve. And they're in a garden. They're in a garden. A place of pleasure. A place of delight. In that garden, there was harmony. There was peace. There was joy. There was enjoyment. We know that that garden was a place of communion with God. There was no disorder. There was no chaos. There was no conflict. There was no struggle. There was no pain. There was no disease. There was no death. We know by the time you get to Genesis chapter 3, everything changes. Sin marched in, and that garden is now wilderness. Quite a difference between a garden and a wilderness. Sin is the great wrecker. Sin never upgrades anything. Never. Quite a difference between a garden and a wilderness. But it is in this wilderness that you and I have been placed. It is in this wilderness that we are to serve God. Shortly before his arrest, Jesus said, we hear him praying, John 17:11. And now I am no more in this world, but these are in the world. You and I are the these. These are in the world. And Jesus prayed concerning that. I am no longer in the world, but these are in the world. It is a place that is very trying. It is a very difficult, a threatening, a dangerous, a very challenging place. The world. It is a barren and arid region. Not a place for comfortable living. The world. It is a place that will, from time to time, tax God's people to the breaking point. The world. These are in the world. And this world is like a wilderness. In this wilderness, there are many, many pitfalls. There are many traps. Many places where you can become snagged. It is a place where we can become very easily maimed. Where we can very easily become trapped. It's filled with innumerable obstacles. It's a place of desolation. It's a place where we find ourselves many times in a position of dilemma. It's a place of trouble and distress. Many difficulties in this world. It's a place of strain. It is a place of misery. It is a place where we will suffer. It is a place where we experience sorrow and affliction. And this world is depicted by the wilderness, a place of degradation and bankruptcy. It's a place where people are frantically trying to fill the void that sin has brought in. The emptiness and the insecurity. And they're trying to fill this void with the things that only increases the emptiness. You know, people will say all the time, pray for so-and-so, I believe they're searching. Everybody is. Because when man sinned, it created a void in the soul of man. And everyone is searching to fill that void. The problem is they're all searching in the wrong place. It is a place of great tribulation. The world is under the dominion of Satan. In fact, it embodies the very spirit of Satan. It bears his image. And as it looks like him. The world is a wicked place. It is a place of darkness. It is a place of deceit. The very sphere of rebellion against God. It is a place that's ignorant of God. All the ignorance of God that we find in the world. It's a place where the enemies and the haters of God dwell. The world. It's a place where the forces of hell carry out the agenda and the programs of Satan. Many do so without even knowing what they're doing. There's a place of Antichrist spirit. It didn't just become this place in the last 40 years. It's always been this place since the fall. But it has gotten worse. The Bible teaches that. And it will continue to get worse. It is a place that prefers Barabbas, a thief and a robber, over Jesus Christ. A place of man-centeredness, where the emphasis and the goal and the aim is self. And this world pictured by the wilderness is a place of alienation from God. It is a place of depravity. It is a place of vileness and wickedness. It is a place of ungodliness and abomination. It is a place of blasphemy. It is a place of heresy. It goes without saying that it is a place of spiritual contamination. It is a place of spiritual poison. It is a place of irreverence toward God. And it is very provocative to God. So the world, pictured by this wilderness, is a traumatic place for God's people. And an extremely dangerous place. It is a place of wild beasts. A place where we can be devoured. Again, it's a very dangerous place. So look into this wilderness. It depicts the world. And looking into this wilderness, we see a people that have disregarded and rejected God. As you look into this wilderness, you see a people that are offended by God. It's a sad day. People are offended by God and not offended by the homosexual. That's a sad, sad commentary on our world. You look into this wilderness and you see a people that have expelled God from their lives as they wander around in the wilderness. Looking into this wilderness, we see manifest hostility toward God. An aversion to God. A departure from God. Looking into this wilderness, we see a people under the control, under the manipulation of an anti-God sentiment. That's what you see as you look into this wilderness. Looking into this wilderness, we see an abhorrent place. It is a deceptive place. It is a place of foolishness. Look into the wilderness. The foolishness that abounds. People think entertainment and sports is life. That's foolishness. Foolishness. We see, as you look into this wilderness, a people duped. A people enslaved in a humanistic, diabolical, immoral, perverted and permissive way of life. They're duped by it. They're enslaved in it. You look into this wilderness and you see a people who have had their brains saturated with the twisted, perverted, erroneous beliefs, convictions, views, feelings, and attitudes of those who are offended by God. And their brains have been saturated with this and continues to be so. And these people are looked upon as the intelligent ones, the ones who will fix what's wrong. They're the problem. Looking into this wilderness, everywhere you look is that which is reprobate, corrupt, and profane. Everywhere you look is heathen worship, heathen images, heathen talk, heathen ways, heathen philosophies, heathen attitudes, heathen pursuits. And you see a people under the power, under the influence and under the sway and the effect of the carnal. People are controlled by the carnal in this wilderness. And then you see those who want to do what's right, but they're intimidated by hell's crowd. And they just eventually blend in with the wilderness. Looking into this wilderness, we see the allurements. We see the enticements of a corrupt, twisted, and godless society. But perhaps sadder still, we look into this wilderness and you see a people eager to sell themselves as slaves to this way of life. Not only eager to sell themselves, but willing to sacrifice their children upon the altars of this life. You look into this wilderness and you see a people that is drawn to idolatry, a people that is drawn to adultery and fornication, nakedness, sodomy, perversion, lying, cheating, stealing, on and on we could go. They're drawn to these things. Looking into this wilderness, we see the so-called intelligent ones seeking to redefine words, to redefine and to minimize and to justify sin. You look into this wilderness, you see a place where God's ways are blatantly ignored and rejected. And good is considered evil. And evil is considered good. And the lines between right and wrong have been obliterated. The lines between truth and error, between morality and immorality, between decency and indecency, those lines have been expunged. And evil is now exalted. and biblical standards are mocked. And if you hold the biblical standards, you are considered outdated. You're considered dumb. You're considered an idiot. And even God's people are intimidated by that. Well, I don't want to be considered stupid. Well, then don't join the crowd of the stupid. Take a stand for biblical standards. Looking into this wilderness, we see a people who praise and revere and idolize and celebrate the abominable. It used to be that you could watch a parade and enjoy it. You can't do that anymore. Because the homosexuals are going to have a float. And if they have a sponsor on that float, that tells me don't buy their product. You say, well, you don't know who supports it. No, but when they make it known, I now know. And if they're depraved enough to make it known, I'm not foolish enough to buy their product. They celebrate the abominable, the offensive, and the repulsive. You look into this wilderness and you see the demonic. The demonic is all around us. It's everywhere. People are too ignorant to see it, but it's everywhere. You look into this wilderness and you see that which is demeaning to humanity. The United States is very hypocritical. They like to talk about nations that do inhumane things. We're one of the most guilty. Demeaning to humanity. You see the blasphemous. You see that which seeks to erode biblical conviction. Looking into this wilderness, you see people bowing. And they're bowing at the altars of humanism. They're bowing at the altars of pragmatism. If it works, it's got to be okay. They're bowing at the altars of academia. If you've got a degree, you're intelligent. Some of the most ignorant people on the planet have degrees. They bow to the altars of materialism and self-esteem, psychology, political correctness, a social gospel. They bow to these altars. So you look into this wilderness and you see a people with an obsessive fascination with that which is against God. I mean, their fascination is obsessive. And some of God's people get intimidated. Well, if everybody else is fascinated with this, I guess I should be interested. God help us. If the world's fascinated with it, we probably shouldn't have anything to do with it. Looking into this wilderness, we see a feverish promotion of evil. People don't seem to think it's any big deal for their kindergartner to be taught that homosexuality is okay. That's a big deal. I'm going to be down at that school. Well, what can we do? Looking into this wilderness, we see a brainwashed people. They believe they must be accepting. They must be accommodating. And they must embrace that which God calls an abomination. You know, there are people today in our fellowship, because I've corrected many of them. Well, there's no difference between a divorced and remarried person than there is two homosexuals marrying. You're comparing apples and oranges. You're not even comparing the same thing. First of all, homosexuality is an unnatural sin. What I said divorce and marriage, what I meant was adultery, fornication. There's no difference. We allow the adulterer and the fornicator, so therefore we have to allow the homosexual. There's no difference. Oh, there's a huge difference. Homosexuality is not natural. That makes it demonic. It is a demonic sin. Don't compare apples and oranges. Looking into this wilderness, we see a people spellbound by modern day sorcery. We see a people looking for answers, again, where there are none. You look into this wilderness and you see the ACLU, you see Hollywood, you see leftists, you see atheists, you see homosexual activists. And they're all seeking to criminalize Christianity. That's your goal. That's your goal. Oh, they'll say, we're just trying to make everybody's life better. No. Looking in this wilderness, see the land has been stripped of recognition of God, stripped of God-honoring values, stripped of morality and integrity, and therefore stripped of sanity. Looking into this wilderness, we see the loss of reverence. We see the loss of shame. We see the loss of meaning in sexuality. The loss of meaning in life. The loss of meaning in marriage. You see the devaluation of life and the devaluation and the loss of fulfillment and happiness. So as you look into this wilderness, what you see is a culture spinning out of control. Caught in a cycle of absolute insanity. Just when you think you've heard the stupidest thing you've ever heard, watch another program, you'll hear something worse. It just keeps getting crazier and crazier and crazier. When you look into this wilderness, what you see is the horrific. It's a horrific place. You see deterioration. You see barrenness. You see desolation. You see decay. And as you look into this wilderness, there are ruins everywhere. Government has been ruined. The judicial system has been ruined. Schools have been ruined. Families are in ruins. Marriages are in ruins. Homes are in ruins. And lives are in ruins. Everywhere in this wilderness is ruins. Everywhere you go. And as you look into this wilderness, you see that there's darkness. And overhead is a thick cloud of doom, which is the judgment. That's what you see when you look into this wilderness. But notice what else they saw. You have this awful wilderness. But we read in our text, who is this? Again, that's an expression of wonder, amazement. Who is this that cometh? That's describing her present and continual movement. Cometh. Up. Describing the direction of her movement. from out of the wilderness. From that we see. She is not snuggled into some comfort zone in the wilderness. She's moving. But she's not just moving in circles in the wilderness. She's not going further into the wilderness. She's coming up from the wilderness. She's ascending. And you look at her. It ought to be descriptive of the Lord's churches. And if it's going to be descriptive of the Lord's churches, it has to be descriptive of you and I, the members. You look at her. She's not distracted by the wilderness. She's not stuck in the wilderness. She's not entangled in the wilderness. She's not overcome by the wilderness. She's not held down by the wilderness. She's coming up out of the wilderness. Notice its present tense. Who is this that cometh up from the wilderness? That is, she's in the process of becoming more and more distinct from the wilderness. The truth is, the worse the world gets, the more noticeable we should be. She is becoming more and more distinct from the wilderness. She is in contrast to the wilderness. The fact that she's coming up out of the wilderness is victory. It's victory. As you read Song of Solomon, you'll see in chapter 1 and also later on in chapters 3, she has been reviled. She has been ridiculed. She has been battered. She has been bruised. Perhaps knocked down a few times. But notice, she's not defeated. She's not defeated in the wilderness. Nor is she defined by the wilderness. Nor is she stopped in the wilderness. She's rising victoriously above the dungeons of that wilderness, above the traps, above the giants and the obstacles and the barriers of the wilderness. She is rising triumphantly above all the vileness and everything that we've said about this world. She's rising above it. She's not stopped. She's not settled in. But she's rising victoriously above a wilderness that is a cesspool. She's coming up out of it. She's not duped. She's not spellbound with the lies and deceits of the wilderness. She's rising triumphantly. She's gaining in altitude. We have here a picture of spiritual advancement. She's advancing up from the wilderness. The question is, can we see ourselves? Or are we wandering in circles in the wilderness? Are we going further into the wilderness, becoming more and more entrenched? Or are we coming up out of the wilderness? It is true that one glorious day, we're going to be lifted from this wilderness into the glories of heaven, where we will behold Jesus in all His glory. That day is coming. One day, We're going to come up out of this wilderness and into the joy and the exuberance of heaven. One day, we're going to come up out of this wilderness of trials and storms and sorrows and battles. And we're going to enter into perfect and complete victory. We have this hope. We have this assurance. But until then, that day is coming. But until then, we are to be advancing out of this wilderness. That's to be the direction of our life. Beware of anything that's going to drag you further into the wilderness. Ours is to be an advancing out of the wilderness. We have the blessed hope of heaven. But until then, we are to be rising above and becoming more and more distinct from the wilderness. When people come into this church and we have assembled to worship, they're not saved. I'm going to get concerned if they don't think we're nuts. They ought to think, well, there are some crazy people. Praise God if they think that. Woe unto us if they think, you know what, I can fit right in there. That's your concern. When the world thinks they can fit in, you've got a problem. You've got a real problem. As the sons and daughters of God, we're called to something more than survival in the wilderness. We're called upon to thrive in the wilderness, to be advancing out of the wilderness. Again, make your plans, but beware of anything that's going to bring you further into the wilderness. Beware of people that are going to drag you further into the wilderness. Beware. We're not to be going further into the wilderness. We're to be coming up out of it. And one day, we'll be completely taken out of it. Amen. I'm looking forward to coming out of this mess. But in the meantime, we're to be coming out. We're not going to get completely out until that day. But in the meantime, we're to be making progress out of the wilderness. God help us. If you're here and lost today, we've been speaking to the saved. But the lost are always in our services, on our hearts and minds. We have a burden for you. You need to be saved. And there's only one who can save your soul. And that's Jesus Christ. You need to trust Him. You need to come to Him. He's your only hope. It's the only hope you have. Pray that God would show you your lost condition. And that you'd cry out to Him for mercy. If you can come to Him, He will in no wise cast you out. If you can come. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song.